From 12 News, this is Newsmakers.
Our conversations with the 2022 Rhode Island gubernatorial candidates continues this week on Newsmakers. Matt Brown, the former Democratic Secretary of State, is once again seeking the state's top job and hoping to increase the ranks of progressive lawmakers at the State House. But he's entered a crowded Democratic primary with incumbent Governor Dan McKee, Secretary of State Nelly Gorbea, former CBS executive Helena Folks, and community activist Luis Daniel Munoz. Welcome to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White, alongside 12 News politics editor Ted Nesi, Matt Brown, Democratic candidate for governor. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
60 seconds or less, why do you want to be governor?
The stakes are really high in the times we're living in. Democracy is at stake, the planet's at stake, reproductive freedom is at stake. And the thing that people most want to do is at stake, which is just to provide for their families. And that's because the costs of the basic things people need, housing and health care, have gone up hundreds of percent, and people's wages have stayed essentially the same. And that means they're struggling to get by and keep a roof over their families' heads and take care of their kids. And the people in power are not going to do anything about it. They're the ones who got us here in the first place. So I'm running along with the great State Senator Cynthia Mendes for Lieutenant Governor, and we're running with a whole group of fantastic Rhode Islanders across the state running for the legislature and municipal offices to win a governing majority in the state so we can finally start to change things, make sure people can earn a living wage, make sure they can afford to see a doctor, make sure they can afford to put a roof over their heads and fight the climate crisis and address these issues we should have addressed a long time ago.
We're going to hit up a lot of those policy issues throughout this half hour, but I do want to ask you this. You're one of the founders of the Rhode Island Political Cooperative, which is a progressive political organization, a group that, among other things, seeks to promote candidates of color. Why is a wealthy white male the right choice for the co-op to be top of the ticket?
Well, I founded the Rhode Island Political Cooperative and co-chair it with two great Rhode Island leaders, Senator Jeanine Culkin and Jennifer Rourke. And our mission is to win a governing majority for this state, a multiracial governing majority. We have a terrific group of candidates. We, in 2020, won 10 races, and in doing so, made the Rhode Island legislature more racially diverse than it's ever been. And that's really important to us, and we're going to keep doing that. And so that's the kind of change we need to bring to this state. And things are not going to change until we get new people
up there. But you really wouldn't be changed. That's my point. My question is, you're running for governor, white guy, wealthy white guy. This is the co-op is seeking, as you say, to diversify, to make change. Are you really changed?
Well, I'm not running just to win the governor's seat. We're running to win a whole new government and to do it as part of a group. And, you know, part of the reason is, I think part of the problem with politics as it has been practiced is that it is a do-it-yourself, do-it-alone, ego-driven process for a lot of people. And that's the opposite of what we're doing. We're doing this as a coalition, as a cooperative, as a community of people running together on a shared platform to bring real change to the state.
If your campaign's known for one thing, and you already ticked off some of its expansive policy ideas, fast switch to renewable energy, lots of new housing construction, Medicare for all, I have to ask, if your entire platform was put into a budget in year one, what is the gross cost, do you estimate, of doing all the things that you say you want to do if you're elected?
Well, these are things we need to do. I mean, just to be clear, the way that our government has prioritized the budget for decades is to take money from the people and funnel it to large corporations. Often those corporations' executives are donors to those politicians in their campaigns, and to give massive tax breaks to the 1%. These are the choices that they've made. That tax cut that the people in power gave 15 years ago to the 1%, just the richest people in this state, cost the state $1 billion while they left our schools crumbling, our kids, thousands of kids without a good education, people struggling to afford housing, some people slipping through the cracks and living on the streets. So it's about priorities. And I believe, and the terrific group of candidates I'm running with believe, we need to change our priorities. We need to stop giving tax breaks to the richest 1% and stop giving corporate giveaways to large corporations. We need to invest in good schools. We need to invest in bringing down the costs of housing. We need to raise people's wages. We need to make it possible for people to just do what they most want to do, which is to provide for their families.
But that's my question. Invest. How much? How much, you know, pencil it out. How much would these plans cost? Just to, you know, because if you want people to think of them as a real thing that might happen, that one of those is how much would that be? And then what would we need to find to cover it?
So give you an example. So housing. So as you know, we have a housing crisis in this state. A lot of people can't afford their housing. Part of the reason we have a housing crisis in this state is that we don't have enough affordable homes for people. So we have a plan that we've put out and that we will put in place when we're governing to build 10,000 truly affordable homes and make sure that those homes are green. And we're going to pay for that by using some of the so-called ARPA, COVID Emergency Relief Funds, increasing taxes on the wealthy. So there, you know, the funding is there. I mean, the funding, as you know, we've been talking about this for a year. The funding is there in large part this year from the federal government, which sent $1.1 billion to this state over a year ago. And Dan McKee has failed to move it out. It took him almost a year to get any of it out. And now he's only spent 10% of it. You know, states on average across the country have spent 2/3 of that funding, meeting the urgent needs of the people in their state. So the funding is there. It's a question of priorities, it's a question of competence, and it's a question about caring about the needs that people are facing.
Do you have, though, a cost estimate for the 10,000? You said the funding's there, but how much of the funding would go to would it take to do the 10,000 homes?
Yeah, we do, and we can, you know, we're going to lay all that out. We actually put those out a few months back. But, you know, a lot of that is in the ARPA funding, and a lot of the ARPA funding is dedicated and can be dedicated to housing.
McKee is hoping they'll use all the ARPA funding up in the budget next month. If there's none left, does that mean your plans aren't going to be able to be funded because it'll be gone when you get into office in January if they've already appropriated it all in this budget?
Well, as I've said, Ted, you know, the funding is there for doing these things. It's that we've given it to the wrong places. So, for example, the Superman building. You know, the state is funneling millions of dollars to a corporate developer to build largely luxury apartments instead of investing in truly affordable homes. So these are choices that the people in power make over and over in favor of the very rich and large corporations instead of the people of this state.
Okay, so what would Governor Brown do with the Superman building? You obviously don't like the plan. So what would you do with it? Would it just remain empty under your administration?
Well, we could do actual affordable homes, and the state could invest in that instead of giving a handout to a corporate developer who's going to profit off of public funds.
So make actual affordable homes. You mean in the Superman building? My question is, what would you do with the Superman building?
Yeah, you can make affordable apartment units. But these are not affordable for Rhode Islanders. And, you know, it's not just about buying homes, it's also about renting homes. You know, the rents went up 24% during the pandemic. So part of what we're calling for is a cap, an annual cap on rent increases of 4%. So people stop getting pushed out of the ability to afford their apartments.
Well, let me ask you about that if I could, Matt. This 4% cap, we are seeing property taxes in Providence go up pretty high. Our colleague Steph Machado has done a lot of reporting on that. What do you say to local landlords who have to offset these skyrocketing property taxes when you want to cap the ability to raise rent at 4%? What do they do?
Well, we have to do both. I mean, the underlying problem with the affordable housing crisis in this state is that we don't have enough affordable homes. We just don't have the inventory, and that's what has driven the prices up. So we are going to do both. We're going to build 10,000 affordable homes, and we're going to cap rent increases. We can't just do one or the other.
Yeah,
we're going to do both.
But what about my question about taxes? Taxes are going up. There are landlords that, you know, a lot of the reasons that rents go up is because they have to offset the increase in property taxes.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that what is driving the prices of housing up, which is also related to driving up the taxes, is that we don't have enough affordable homes, and we've got to build those, and the state has to invest in those, and we can't do it, you know, a couple of hundred here and a couple of hundred there. We need to do 10,000 and really break the back of the affordable housing crisis in this state.
I want to go back to the Superman building, because I'm curious, if we were to do, you know, right now it is a privately owned building. To do a one with more affordable units, as you suggested, do you think the state or city should take it by eminent domain and make it a fully state-owned building? Would you still work with this developer, and try to do it as a public-private partnership? You know, I'm trying to think of how you would, with such a different approach, how you would concretely execute it.
I mean, we could consider all of those mechanisms. What we can't do is continue to take the people's money and give it to for-profit private developers to build luxury apartments. That's the thing we can't do. We've got to reprioritize, and we've got to be focused on the fact that many, many people, thousands of people across the state, can barely afford to put a roof over their heads. And that needs to be the problem we're solving, and we cannot do it by giving money to large corporate developers to profit. We need to do it by focusing on solving this problem. I mean, I've met people who are working people. I've met a teacher with her daughter who was barely getting by, and the rent went up, and they couldn't afford it, and they're living in a car outside in this state. There are a lot of people who don't even show up in the numbers, by the way, who are not showing up in the shelters, who are surf couching or living in their cars, who are unhoused because of the depths of this affordable housing crisis. And Dan McKee has done nothing about it. So we, you know, Cynthia Mendes and a lot of Rhode Islanders and I went out and slept outside the state house for two of us for 16 nights in tents in the winter, because Governor McKee, in spite of having all those the COVID emergency funds, hadn't done anything about the fact that we had hundreds of people living outside in the street going into the freezing
cold. Now, McKee and his administration would say, you know, they put more money into the shelter funding. They had the motel programs that are now winding down. He has put addressing homelessness money into his ARPA plan, which is the legislature's the one that hasn't executed on it yet. They would push back that they've done nothing.
So they had done nothing for 10 months when the advocates had been telling them all that time, this crisis is coming. We're about to have people freeze to death outside in the state. And it wasn't until Rhode Islanders went out and protested for weeks on end outside the state house that they finally did something, because it became a political problem for them. But here we are again. Those contracts that were established for winter shelter have come up and are coming up, and those people are being forced out into the streets. And again, Dan McKee has no plan for this. I will say about Governor McKee, doesn't seem very engaged, doesn't seem very focused on the issues that people are struggling with. You know, we're still 6 weeks out from the filing date. I would not be surprised if he does not run again.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem engaged. I mean, you guys have been doing this a long time.
Would somebody who's not running again show up at a gubernatorial forum
they canceled on?
He almost didn't.
Yeah, but he did. He was there.
Would somebody running again consider not showing up at a gubernatorial forum? You know, so we'll see. But he does not seem engaged, does not seem focused, does not bring any urgency. I mean, the fact that we have that $1 billion of federal funds. I mean, think about this. You're the governor, and the federal government sends you $1 billion, and you've been part of a conversation in a state that has said for years, we can't look out for our kids in schools, we can't deal with affordable housing, we can't deal with health care because we don't have enough money. And then you're given $1 billion and you don't spend it for a year. That seems like somebody not very engaged.
Look, we're going to have to go to a break soon, so I want to squeeze in another question here. Your campaign website says, quote, when elected to office, they, meaning your candidates from the co-op, will replace the corrupt politicians who control our state government. Who are the corrupt politicians, name them, that you're talking about?
Well, I mean, Governor McKee is a year into office and already has an FBI investigation.
Yeah, but you're
for
convicting
corruption.
Him. An investigation is just an investigation. You well know, you experienced it, 2006, campaign finance issue, SEC came out and said, FEC yeah. came out and said, you know, nothing illegal happened there. You admitted the optics weren't great, but you know what it's like to be at the other end of the spear. Are you just throwing stones?
But look at what he did. His administration gave a very lucrative contract to a firm with no experience in the field, with ties to his allies. I mean, this is the kind of thing we've seen over and over and over. And, you know, it costs the people of this state. I mean, the other important point about this is there is legal corruption that goes on in this state every day, which is the fact that, you know, again, take Governor McKee. That Superman deal, funneling money, the people's money, to a corporate developer, for-profit developer to build luxury condos, the executives of that firm are major donors to Governor McKee. So that, you know, so that flow of corporate money and, you know, into politicians.
So you would oppose any economic development projects whatsoever then, because you define it as legal corruption.
Well, we've got to break the ties between corporate money, corporate lobbyists, and our governing. That's why Senator Mendes and I and all the candidates in the Rhode Island Political Cooperative refuse money from corporate PACs, corporate lobbyists, and the fossil fuel industry. We've got to break that tie.
All right. We do have to go to a break. We're way overdue. Our guest this week is Democratic candidate for Governor Matt Brown. Stay with us. You're watching Newsmakers. Welcome back to Newsmakers. I'm Tim White, alongside 12 News politics editor Ted Nisi. Our guest this week is Democratic candidate for governor Matt Brown. Matt, I want to talk about education. There was a bill before the legislature in the last session that would have put a moratorium on the expansion of charter schools. It failed in the House last time around, but it could be back. If that were to reach your desk, would you sign it? Would you want to cap or stop the expansion of charter schools in Rhode Island?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be building a system that serves all the kids in the public schools, all of the public schools. My view on what the problem, part of the underlying problem here is that 15 years ago, the people in power gave a tax cut to the richest 1% that cost $1 billion, which is, if you look at the schools, you guys have read the Johns Hopkins reports, the school buildings are crumbling. Lots of kids aren't getting a good education. Teachers are quitting in droves. You've got starting salaries for teachers of $34,000 a year. What kind of an investment is this that we're making in our children when we're giving a $1 billion tax cut to the richest 1%? What kind of thinking goes into that decision? It's wrong. It's immoral. It's also, the argument that that is good economics is absolutely upside down.
Where do your kids go to school?
My daughter goes to Lincoln, and my son, who's 14, goes to community prep.
So, back to the charter school question. A lot of parents in, let's say, Providence, who are trying to get out of those schools that you just described, they seek that choice. Why can you have that choice, but they're not allowed to?
I think the issue is that everybody should be able to get a good school and for their kids. And the only way we're going to do that, if we're being realistic, is to make the public schools great. All the public schools. If we sort of do, a small sliver over here and a small sliver over there, we're going to leave out the super majority of kids from getting a good education. And so we can't pull out of our public school system. We have to invest in it. We have to make them great. The other thing we need to do is make it a right for
a constitutional
kids in the state, right, which Massachusetts has. Mm-hmm. And, it's not a coincidence. It was about a couple of decades ago that they established in Massachusetts that children have a right to an equal quality education. We did not. Their schools, if you just go 15 minutes and cross the border, they've got some of the better schools in the country, and we don't. So we need to make it a right. We need to raise taxes on the 1% and invest in our schools and raise the salaries for our starting teachers.
You've been involved in advocacy around nuclear policy over the years. And right now I'm reading more and more people suggest that expanding nuclear energy will need to be part of the solution for clean energy, to get away from carbon-burning fossil fuels. We see in some cases where, look at Europe, where they shut down a lot of their nuclear plants. Now they're even more dependent on Russia and things like that. As someone who's thought a lot about that, do you agree that nuclear has to be part of the solution to deal with climate change and have enough energy?
I think the focus has got to be on wind and solar. We've got wind and solar everywhere, right, in the country. It's, in other words, it's a local source of energy. In Rhode Island, we've got massive capacity for wind power. I looked at this, carefully. We have enough capacity off the shore of Rhode Island to generate twice the power that we need for the state, so we could power the state and export wind power to other states. But the other thing we got to do is not just talk about building out renewable clean sources of energy. We need to do that. We have a plan to do that. We also need to realize we are in a huge fight with the fossil fuel industry. We need to shut them down, and that includes in Rhode Island, including in places like the Port of Providence, where we have the second largest gas storage facility in the region, liquid gas storage facility in the region. We got Shell Oil, we got BP Oil. We've got to shut them down, not only to save the planet, and that seemed like how could it be more urgent than that need, but also because those polluting industries in the port are poisoning the families and the kids in that neighborhood, mostly a black and brown neighborhood that have suffered through that. So we need to shut down the fossil fuel industry. We need to build out clean and renewable energy. Our plan is to do that and make Rhode Island the first state in the country that runs 100% on clean energy and the first state in the country that's net zero emissions.
So I didn't hear you rule out nuclear power. I just didn't hear you talk much about it in that answer. Is that part of the solution, even if historically environmentalists have not loved the idea of nuclear power?
As I said, I really think we got to get as far as we can with wind and solar, which are good, clean, safe, and I think we can get there. There's a lot of potential for wind power and solar power that's still untapped. And by the way, we've got to do solar without cutting down our forests. That's, you know, what is it, cutting off your arm to spite your nose, to spite your face,
whatever, like that, right? Yeah.
But, you know, we need our forests for a lot of reasons, including to fight climate change. So we got to do a solar rooftop.
Let me move on here. Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of controversy around the defund the police movement and questions about what that means and how it's defined, often a rallying cry of progressives. Do you support defunding the police?
No, our plan is actually the most comprehensive plan to fundamentally change the criminal justice system that we have, which is broken, which is not making people safe. That includes ending cash bail. It includes banning for-profit prisons. We have a for-profit prison in the state. Nobody should profit off of imprisoning other people. When we legalize cannabis, we need to have automatic expungement of records. We need to invest in mental health. We need to invest in drug treatment centers. So we have a very comprehensive plan to really fundamentally change our criminal justice system so it is fair and just and keeps our community safe.
But it still includes funding law enforcement.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to admit, I wasn't sure you'd run for governor this year because Nelly Gorbea was running. And she's your former deputy at the Secretary of State's office. She was the only prominent Democrat I remember who refused to endorse Gina Raimondo when you primaried Gina Raimondo in 2018. She'd make history as the first Latina elected governor in Maryland. But you are running against her. Did you think twice about it, at least, due to your personal history, or did that not come up in your mind at all?
Well, I'm running for governor, like everybody else. And my view, I mean, as you know, is that, you know, people who have a vision and who want to serve should run. And, you know, I've put forward the things that I believe in, that we need to pay people truly a living wage, which is $19 an hour. We need to build 10,000 green affordable homes. We need to shut down the fossil fuel polluting industries. There are a lot of things that I believe we need to do, and I'm not running alone.
Is Nelly Gorbea like part of the corrupt political establishment, in your view?
Well, look, you know, I've been talking about particularly the problems that Dan McKee is facing, and I think he's got a big problem there. And what I'm talking about is that we are ultimately not going to be able to change things in this state until we not only elect a new governor, but we elect new governing majorities and oust the whole crowd that's been up there running things for a long time. So that's what we're fighting for. And again, I'm not doing it alone. We're doing it with an incredible group of candidates. These are nurses, teachers,
social workers. Has Nelly done a good job as Secretary of State?
Nelly can make her case to you guys when she comes in, which I'm sure will be soon.
You talked about $19 an hour as part of your platform as a minimum wage for Rhode Island. Any concern about at all what that would mean to small businesses in Rhode Island?
I think it's one of the most important things we can do for small businesses. I think that the one of the biggest problems for the economy in this state and for small businesses in this state is that we have an economy here where most people just don't have any money in their pockets because what they make has to go to the incredibly high costs of things like housing and healthcare, the basics. And they don't have extra money to go spend at their local small business. So raising wages is a great investment, not just in our workers, but also in the small businesses.
Couldn't it
mean
fewer jobs, though, if small businesses have to offset that higher wage?
You know, the data is that you raise wages and it actually improves the economy and improves businesses, and that's what's going to happen here.
I want to ask you a political question. You're a progressive guy, obviously. Should President Biden run for re-election, or would you like to see another Democratic candidate throw their hat into the ring to be a nominee?
I'm not going to get into the.
Well, you didn't say he should. You didn't say he should run again.
I don't think he has said what he's going to do. I'm not going to get into that.
You don't think anybody's running again? So I want to ask you about inflation. It's coming up in polls. The number one concern of voters, and it's rocketed higher in the polling for obvious reasons. And one of the things that you're hearing is concern that maybe there was too much money put out too fast based on what the supply in the economy could deal with the American Rescue Plan last year. As a progressive with big plans, a lot of things you want to do, has the unexpected inflation surge given you any pause or made you rethink any part of your agenda, or at least you know, rethink the order you have to do things in or anything like that? Has it had any effect on your plans?
Well, I think the important thing to remember about the inflation problem, which is real and acute, is that it comes on top of, for working people, decades of the costs of the basic things they need going up, not 5 or 10%, but hundreds of percent. So, you know, when people, you know, talk about inflation, they've got to remember that that people have been suffering from that for a long time on their on meeting their basic needs.
We have
needs.
About 30 seconds.
Okay. So when we invest in this state, it needs to be directed at meeting those urgent needs that people are facing, lowering the cost of housing, lowering the cost of health care, making sure people have good public schools for their kids. We need to be targeting our investment to bring down the costs of people meeting their basic needs.
Democratic candidate for Rhode Island Governor Matt Brown, thanks so much for joining us. If you missed any of it, it's on WPRI.com. For Ted Nesi, I'm Tim White. We'll see you next week on Newsmakers.